Good morning and happy new year. We are the Morning Constitutional. We've got a fun show to you for you today, but today we're not going to be going over a lot of articles. We're just going to have some fun. How you doing, TFM?
I'm better than I deserve. Hold on. The widgets aren't working. Let me reset them. There must have been some type of an issue.
Motherfucker.
Well, the thing is whenever they update, and I know Kingsland and AMR are trying to like nail down a lot of these issues, but whenever they do an update, I have to manually refresh to reset the socket. Okay, it looks like let me reset Celestina, and that should be it. Now, I didn't do a show last week because there was no news, and this week there's no news either.
I was a little upset about that. I got like everything together. I set aside time. I was all ready to log in, and then I saw you post that there's no show. It's like
there's nothing to talk about. Like, and unfortunately,
since when do we need a topic to talk about?
So the problem is the Wednesday show is about the news. What the fuck? The widgets went down again. They were just there, and now they're down again. So okay, whatever. It is what it is. I guess shit's just going to break today. I'm showing the Jitsi room.
Before I forget to tell you, we were talking about weaponry before in blacksmithing. The first question I ask someone when they want me to do something for them is I ask them if they want it to be functional or not. If they're planning to buy, like, let's say a sword, but they want it to just be for display, like they want to put it on a cabinet or something like that, I don't have to make it out of hardened steel. I can make it out of soft metal. It'll look a lot better. But if they ever whack something with it, it's going to break. Generally, I ask them, do they want it to be functional?
Yeah, generally, if it's a display piece, if it's going to be hung up on a wall, you make it out of stainless steel. That way you don't have to clean it. It doesn't rust. But you don't want to fight with a stainless steel sword. It will snap like a dry and brittle twig. You need to make it, if you're going to make a sword, you're going to need to make it out of spring steel. But spring steel has to be maintained, so there is a question of functionality. But yeah, all the widgets are acting weird. The Jitsi room is showing red, even though I can clearly hear you. My widgets aren't working, so I don't fucking know. But anyway, whatever. It's going to be one of those shows. We only have two articles to talk about. And then we have
we have an academic exercise.
Yeah, well, there's a video that Academic Agent put out this morning that I don't want to so much respond to, but I want to piggyback off of. So I thought that would, like, eat up a little bit of time. But it's going to be a pretty short show today because there's frankly nothing to talk about. The whole world is basically just kind of taking the week off. And the widgets are down. So, it's just one of those things. So hopefully whatever's going on, the widgets and the website and all the bullshit will get fixed by the time we have another show. I don't know what's going on. It's just whatever. Just shit's breaking everywhere. What are you going to do? All right. Let me hit the sponsors up real quick. We have The Dollhouse, purveyor of fine waifu and waifu accessories. Love Nestle, purveyor of sex doll torsos, are very high quality composite material. They feel like a real person as opposed to just a block of rubber. In fact, I did another sex doll review yesterday from a new company called Rillafun. Now, they make TPE torsos, so they're more like Tantaly. But they're cheaper. They're basically cheaper. You basically get a little more for a little less because they're trying to like compete because they're a new company. But I was just reminded about how TPE dolls, they just kind of feel like a block of rubber in the shape of a woman. They don't feel like a woman because they're just a block of TPE with a stick figure metal skeleton in the middle to give it, posture. With the Love Nestle torsos, they have a composite material. So there's like the silicone on top, but then underneath that is a more rigid material, probably rubber or something. But what it does is it feels like muscle. Like if you push down on your own body, you have skin, and then underneath that you have muscle and bone, and that's what a human body feels like. It doesn't feel like rubber with a stick figure skeleton inside of it. So I really appreciate the Love Nestle torsos. Now, I think that TPE dolls feel better when you're using them because the TPE is more stretchy, so the vagina is tighter. It feels more, like, intense. But as far as realism goes, the silicone torsos are much better. They feel much more like the real thing. And the problem with silicone, it's very expensive. So with the most silicone dolls are like twice the price of a comparable TPE doll, which is why TPE is so popular, because it's frankly 50% off. But with Love Nestle, they're about the same price as a TPE torso, because they own the whole supply chain. So they cut off the middleman, so you get really high quality silicone sex doll torsos for about the same price of a comparable TPE torso. You're maybe paying like 15% more, but that's much better than like 100% more. So I'm really excited to be partnering with Love Nestle. They make excellent products. Definitely check them out. Then we have Aaron Clary's A World Without Men, which is his book, which compiles all kinds of sources and statistics about how women don't do anything. Everything is done by men. I know we all pretend that women, you know, do all these wonderful things and society relies on women's labor. That is total bullshit. And I know, like,
I really enjoyed talking to him the other day. I thought that was a lot of fun, the show we did.
Yeah, he was, you know, from my perspective, it was very, like, basic MGTOW 101 topics. But
you know what, though? I'm used to talking to you, who's, like, a MGTOW guru on everything. But it's like, you've done the research to come to a certain point of view. He has a different point of view. And I very rarely hear those point of views because I don't talk to MGTOW Red Pill people very much other than you. So it's like, it was interesting for me to hear a different take, whether I agree with it or not is irrelevant. It was just it was interesting to hear someone that came to a different conclusion.
Well, the problem is the only, it's not really a difference in MGTOW philosophy. It's mostly a difference in, Once you take the red pill, for lack of a better word, once you accept that like female nature is such and society is gynocentric and there's really no fixing it. I mean, on paper, sure, we could take women's rights away. We could do all these things. Is that going to happen? No, it's not going to happen. It's a pie in the sky fantasy, you know, and if it does happen, it will coincide with almost a complete collapse of society as we know it. And we'll frankly have more important things to worry about than, you know, getting married and having a family. We're going to have a lot more pressing matters to attend to. So I can hear you typing. I don't know if you just didn't mute yourself correctly or not while you were doing your thing. But anyway, my point is, no, it's fine. Whatever. My point is that our difference really comes down to, once you swallow that pill, once you realize, okay, a family probably isn't going to happen. This is probably going to be my life. It's only going to get worse. And when I'm inexorably vindicated by the collapse of society and the loss of human rights for women, I'm frankly not going to be enjoying it. I'm probably not going to be alive to enjoy it. I'm probably going to be like in a really bad place regardless. So it's going to be like a Pyrrhic victory. So when you realize that, then you have to ask yourself, well, what do I do? You know, like, what is the point? And a lot of people just go with hedonism. They go with just fucking enjoy life, go do your thing, enjoy the decline, you know, get as much welfare as you can, masturbate as much as you can, you know, whatever. Basically, there's nothing higher to live for. And I understand, like, most people have religion or family or nationalism, but, and I understand those are like kind of the ready-made things, those higher things people live for. It's like handed to you. It's like you're groomed into it when you're a child. But I think and this is the kind of the challenge of Nietzsche, is to be the Übermensch, the overman. And you have to find your own values. Okay. So now is my internet going down? My internet is fine. Why is the website going down? Okay. So now Jitsi is crashing. So I don't know what happened. I don't know if this was like a new year because all the widgets are broken and now the Jitsi room is broken. So that sucks. I mean, there were no donations anyway, so it doesn't really matter. But I was having a nice conversation and now everything's broken. I will refresh the website and see if it comes back, but it's not looking good. So yeah, this is going to be a really short show because we have no donations. Because the widget's not working. Halsey's gone because the Jitsi room's not working. And I don't know. Yeah, and the website's not even loading. So, all right. So that was fun. Fuck. All right. Well, I guess I'll just finish my thought and then I'll just move on by myself because everything broke. So, anyway, as I was saying, sorry about the website going to shit and the show falling apart, but it is what it is. Anyway, my point is, the Nietzsche challenges us to to redefine our own values. And so you think of the three transformations. You have the camel, the lion, and the child. So the camel is a beast of burden. This is where society tells you that you need to live for them. You need to live for your nation, your religion, your people, your ancestors, whatever bullshit. But you have an obligation. You were born into bondage. You must serve them because this is your function. You're a camel. Now put on this load, trek through that desert. This is what you were born for. And so that's the first stage. Now, a lot of people are happy being camels. There's nothing wrong if you're a happy camel. But some people don't like being a camel. So they shrug their burden and they become a lion. Now, the lion is the second transformation. The lion does what he wants. The lion is the master of his own domain. He's the king of the jungle. The problem with the lion is there's nothing else. Like, basically, if you look at lions at a zoo or lions in a lot of pictures, they just kind of sit around. They sit around and they just eat and mate with the female lions. And that's basically as far as they go. And some people, like, that's enough. Again, there's a lot of happy lions out there that are perfectly content doing their thing. The thing is, and this is very challenging, this is the difference between kind of, I would say, the man going his own way and the overman, is finding something to live for and not just to resist. It's easy to say, you know, resisting gynocentrism, resisting the pull of society to turn you into a slave. But to live for something, that takes a certain leap. You know, this is where existentialist philosophy comes in. And so this is where the third transformation comes from, is the child. The child is not as mighty as the lion. The child's full of wonder. The child sees everything with bright, fresh eyes and sees the world as something to engage with and to create. So that's the final transformation. That's the overman. Not just the one who resists and does their own thing like the lion, but the one who changes the world. But the problem is, what do you live for? If you don't have a country, you don't have a family, you don't have a religion, what do you live for? And the answer is whatever you choose to. For me, I look at kind of men in my situation as my virtual kind of family, nation, religion, if you will. You know, the man to my left is my God, the man to my right is my country. You know, if I die for them, is that any less meaningful than if I die for an actual religion or an actual nation? If I simply die for the man on my left and the man on my right? I don't think so. I think that it doesn't. Your life is your life, whatever you choose to live it for, but live for it authentically and find meaning and purpose in living for that thing. But anyway, that's kind of where me and Aaron Clary part ways. I think Aaron Clary's more of a lion. He enjoys doing his own thing, hence he kind of concludes with enjoy the decline, live for yourself, enjoy life, that kind of hedonism. And I would say the vast majority of people, their journey ends at the lion stage. They found their freedom. They broke out of being a camel. They're now a lion, and they're loving their life, they're doing their thing, they're enjoying their freedom, and that's great. I'm not diminishing that. But there's another step beyond that. There's another step beyond the lion where you have to live for something. You have to want to change the world for the better for your fellow man and not just live for yourself. And that kind of leads to the first one of two articles, which is from NPR. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen says U.S. could hit debt ceiling or debt limit within weeks. So this is going to happen right before Trump takes office. It's another debt ceiling bullshit where the Republicans are going to cut a deal and cuck at the 11th hour and give the government whatever. And now you're probably thinking, wait a minute, didn't the government just raise the debt ceiling like a couple weeks ago? Didn't they just fund the government? Why are they out of money again? And the answer is because we just sent all that money to Ukraine. All the money we're spending and willing into existence is being spent on wars we can't afford, housing illegal aliens, and welfare. Basically, wars and welfare, which is why we got off the gold standard in the first place. We abandoned the gold standard in the 70s because Nixon couldn't afford the Vietnam War plus the Great Society with a gold standard. So we either had to cut welfare, end the war, or get off the gold standard. We chose to get off the gold standard. And that was probably the most impactful decision that we've had in living memory. Because if you look at inflation before the 70s, it was relatively flat. If you look at real wage growth, it was relatively positive. But after we got off the gold standard, the government stole everyone's money. Real wages have been flat, adjusted for inflation, since the 70s. They've never gone up. Which is why the boomers have so much money, because they were born in the 40s. They were adults by the 70s. They owned homes, they owned businesses, and they've seen their assets skyrocket, not because of an increase of productivity or wealth, but because of an increase in inflation, which causes asset prices to rise with inflation. And this goes back to this whole H-1B bullshit. So, and I've mentioned this before, but let me kind of, because we don't have fuck else to talk about, I might as well kind of break it down. So there's a thing called the Phillips curve, which is an MMT Keynesian economic theory bullshit, which claims that inflation isn't caused by government printing money, but by low unemployment. So you can fight unemployment, or I'm sorry, you could fight inflation by raising unemployment. And you also keep labor prices low, because usually you have prices go up, and you saw this in like 2021 and 2022. You saw prices going up, and then you saw people striking and demanding wage increases to keep up with the inflation. And once you have the wage increases, they're very difficult to roll back. And the price of labor is always the last thing to go up with inflation. You'll have the price of commodities like oil going up first, then eventually, the stuff on the shelf after the warehouses have to be restocked, and then eventually the wages have to go up. But the thing is the government, they're trying to fight inflation by keeping wages low. And they're keeping wages low through massive amounts of immigration. They're flooding the labor market with immigrants to keep wages low, to fight inflation. Now, but the problem is they didn't stop printing money. Like all the wars, Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, Syria, all these fucking wars we're fighting, we're all fighting them with printed money. Your taxes aren't really going up. If you look at your tax increases, maybe your taxes have gone up a little bit. But by and large, we're funding all of this with fucking printed money that we pull out of our fucking ass. Or we're borrowing money from Europe, who's using a swap line with the Fed to get a bailout to buy our bonds with our own money. And it's all that these swap lines are all off the books. These swap lines are not recorded in the debt or in the money supply, because it's outside the United States. It's all a shell game of bullshit. And it's causing inflation, because it doesn't fucking matter how many layers of bureaucracy and bullshit. It doesn't matter if you do shit off the books. If you print money, you increase demand. And so actually let me do a slight digression to explain how government printing causes inflation. So if the government paid for its spending with taxes, it would spend money on X, but less money would be spent on Y, Z, etc., because people would have to pay higher taxes. And so demand would go down for Y and Z, but go up for X because of the government spending, but it would go down for other things because of the tax increases with lower demand for other products. You would not see a net increase in overall demand. You would see some prices go up as other prices went down, and overall there would be no inflation. Some prices going up and other prices going down is not inflation. Inflation is the general rise in prices overall. That only happens when the government prints money. And the reason why is so simple, because there is no subsequent offsetting anywhere else. If the government taxes, there's a loss of purchasing power in the economy from those having to pay the higher tax. When you print money, nobody's paying for it with their taxes. There is no offsetting of spending anywhere. So everyone is spending the same amount of money that they were already spending in the economy, and then the government is spending new money in the economy with the money it printed. That is an overall increase in demand. That increase in demand raises prices because it's all fucking supply and demand. There is no increase in supply. You just increase demand. Congratulations. Prices go up. And that's how government spending causes inflation. And it doesn't matter if it's off the books. It doesn't matter if it's outside the United States via swap lines and foreign exchange markets. It doesn't fucking matter. Inflation has been a problem since the dawn of human recorded history. Ancient Egypt, Rome, all suffered under inflation. They didn't have central banks. They didn't have fucking the Forex market. They didn't have Wall Street. Everything was off the books because there were no fucking books. And yet they still had inflation because people will react. Like if you're a farmer and all of a sudden demand for your goods doubles, but you can't plant more of the crop to meet the doubling of demand, you're going to have to raise your prices. Now, who told you to do that? Did some economist come down and tell you? No. But if you see twice as many customers and you can't increase the supply, you're going to double the price to basically make sure that only the most demanding customers get what they want. Or yeah, you're going to try to reinvest those profits to create more supply. And that's how eventually inflation stabilizes, is the increase in demand creates an increase in supply as prices go up. But you have to let prices go up. If you disrupt the price increases by fucking the labor market with cheap immigrant labor and depressing wages, you just cause a depression. Because you have Americans who are seeing their cost of living go up, but their wages not go up. Their wages are not keeping pace with inflation. Credit card debt is at all-time highs. Despite skyrocketing rates, people are hanging on by a thread, hoping for the government to do something about the inflation while they're printing shit tons of money to fund all these forever wars. And there's no end in sight. And there's no end. Trump isn't going to change it. Like, I wish shit would work so I could talk to Halsey about this, because I know he has a different opinion about this. He sees there's going to be like this grand bargain where Trump is going to throw Iran under the bus and Russia's going to come back into the fold and the regime's going to win. We're all going to hold hands and sing kumbaya. And no, it's not going to happen. That's not what I'm seeing. Now, I will hold judgment to wait until Trump actually assumes office, because there's a greater than zero chance that Trump is just biding his time, kind of saying what, maybe he's ghosting in plain sight. He's telling everyone and showing everyone what they expect to see and whatever, because he can't do anything until he's president and his people are confirmed. Like if he reveals himself ahead of time, they might try to block his, whatever the word is called, when he becomes president, whatever that ceremony is called. They might try to block that through some legal maneuvering, or they might say that they're not going to confirm any of his cabinet picks to kind of get revenge on him for, you know, going against them. So maybe he's waiting until he's in office, until his people are confirmed, and then he's going to do the thing. But this sounds way too much like fucking QAnon. It just sounds like massive QAnon cope, even when I myself say it. So even though I'm going to, you know, wait and see, what I'm seeing isn't good. I'm not detecting any indication of Trump actually being who the people voted for, which shouldn't surprise you. This is kind of like to be expected at this point in the political system we have. But we're flooding the labor market with illegal aliens. And unfortunately, this whole H-1B thing, all Trump is going to do, and again, maybe I'm wrong, maybe Trump fucking does the thing and this is all bullshit and he's just kind of lulling everyone into a false sense of security. What it looks like the plan is simply replace the, you know, the bad immigrants, you know, the criminals, the rapists, the drug dealers, with good immigrants, i.e. Indians. That's the plan. Because the, and I'll show you why. You want to see why? It's fucking retarded. You're gonna think it's stupid. Here's why. All right. So here are the voting trends of Indian Americans in the last election. Now, according to these charts, 6 in 10 Indian Americans backed Harris, not Trump. But look at the one cohort that backed Trump. That was young male Indians. So women, I mean, to nobody's surprise, I don't know anyone who's like, oh, I can't believe women, especially minority women, vote Democrat. Like, fucking white women vote Democrat too. Like, you have to drill down really far to find, like, you have to make, like, it has to be, like, married Christian white women. Then they tend to vote Republican. But, like, women in general, even white women in general, vote Democrat. Because they want to kill their babies. That's their whole deal. I don't know. Look, it comes down to weakness. Now, the Republicans only won the young male Pajit vote by 4 points. And look at the pandering they did. I mean, J.D. Vance is married to an Indian. And they pandered shamelessly to Indians. And they only won one quarter of the cohorts of Indian Americans by 4 points. They got blown out by older Indians and women, by basically young female Indians voted double for Democrats, and for older female Indians, it's like three or four times what they voted for Republicans. And that's with the shameless pandering. So the thing is like, and this should be obvious. I don't know why people have this. There's this idea of the based immigrant. Like, people talk about, oh, these Mexicans, yeah, they're not American, they don't speak English, but they're Christian. And so they share our values. It's like, you, like that fucking Incredibles meme. You dense motherfucker. Nobody vote. Okay, let me explain. What is the right? The right is the traditional status quo culture, country, nation. That if you want the country to stay the same, that's why you vote for the right. You're the traditional, stable, kind of normalizing force. That's what the right is. If you're an immigrant from anywhere, you're going to want change. You're going to want to turn the country into what you are. This is why most immigrants, when they come to America, they don't wave American flags. They wave Mexican flags or Puerto Rican flags or whatever fucking flag from whatever country they came from. They might learn the language enough to get a job, but they don't assimilate. They don't become American. They're here for the jobs and the welfare. Now, if you properly assimilate, you might then become right wing if you've properly assimilated. But if you haven't assimilated, there's literally no way in hell you will vote for the right, except for very short periods of time when you're being heavily pandered to. Maybe you might vote for, like, Trump in order to, like, for example, young black men voted for Trump because the illegal aliens are competing with the same jobs that young black men are competing for. And the same is true of Indians. So you pander enough to young men are going to vote for the pro-jobs party. If one party is flooding the country with illegal aliens and it's costing them their jobs, they're going to vote for the other guy. But that's very short-lived. By and large, they're not going to become right-wing unless they're properly assimilated and they value the traditional status quo culture. But Indians who are running around, you know, with their Indian flag and their dots on their head and they're praying to Vishnu and all that stuff, they clearly don't want America to stay the same. They want America to become more like India. Now, they might, you know, they might want to kind of split the baby and have a little from column A and a little from column B. But by and large, they're going to demand change. And so the Republicans will have to move to the left away from traditional, you know, values and culture and everything. They're going to have to embrace that. We're going to have to embrace Indian culture and Indian values and all that stuff. We're going to have to turn America into a hybrid of, you know, traditional European culture and fucking, you know, traditional American culture and Indian culture and African culture and all this other shit. And the problem is that has never worked in the history of the fucking world. It has never worked. In fact, if you want a recent history of how this has never worked, if you look at the Middle East, this is what the Ba'ath Party was created for. So when the British carved up the Middle East, they made these countries with all kinds of tribes in the country. And the problem is, you know, like if you were to redesign the Middle East and let these tribes have their own country, it would look completely different. They deliberately carved up the countries in the Middle East to create division within the country so that the British could divide and rule. And the only way this could work was if you had a secular government with a strong man that could basically force all these minority tribes that normally wouldn't get along with each other and kind of beat them into one nation. And that's what the Ba'ath Party was. The Ba'ath Party was the idea of a secular Muslim government that could hold these divergent tribes together. And now that Assad is gone, he was the last one. Saddam was the first. Assad was the last. So the Ba'ath Party has been a complete failure. What do you see? You see tribalism. You see Sunni versus Shiite, Alawite versus Arab, Persian versus Arab, bullshit versus bullshit. And we're back to squabbling tribes. And multiculturalism doesn't work unless you basically obliterate cultures, like the way Rome did. I'm not advocating for this, by the way, necessarily. I'm just saying the way Rome, when they conquered someone like the Gauls, when they conquered Proto-France, they enslaved them for generations until they were assimilated. They didn't give them a choice. Like, you're going to be our slave. We're going to Romanize you. And after one or two generations, once you've been thoroughly Romanized, then we'll let you frolic back in, you know, your home country again. Only after you've been thoroughly Romanized. And the Gauls were thoroughly Romanized. Even after the fall of the Roman Empire. You know, French language is based on Latin. They still maintain their Roman roots. In fact, they were part of the Holy Roman Empire. You know, they're proud of their Roman roots because they were thoroughly Romanized. Now, imagine if they didn't assimilate them, like what happened later in Roman history, where they tried to assimilate, in air quotes, the Germans. So the Germanic tribes were coming through, fleeing from the Huns, and the Romans accepted them, and they let them serve in the military, and they let them be part of Rome, but they did not enslave them. They did not assimilate them. They let them continue their little thing with their culture and their language. Now, the Romans did try to, like, kill their leaders to make sure they maintain control over the clans, but it backfired. So the Romans could not keep control of the Germans. And the Germans ended up rebelling against and defeating the Romans, destroying the Roman Empire in the West, and basically turning the Western Roman Empire into what we now recognize as Europe. So there is no example in history of multiculturalism leading to anything but failure and destruction. You have to assimilate. And the right will not force assimilation. You know who is? China. That's what these Uyghur camps are about. They're not death camps. They're not concentration camps. But the Uyghurs were getting some stupid ideas from ISIS and Al-Qaeda and were starting to become extremists. Now, there's another group of Muslims that live in China that are perfectly peaceful and don't do anything crazy, and the Chinese couldn't give less of a shit about them. But the Uyghurs were starting to get some extremists within their ranks that were starting to radicalize this tribe of Chinese Muslims. And so the Chinese are like, okay, fuck you. We're going to nip this in the bud right now. And they built camps, put the Uyghurs in the camps, and forcefully assimilated them. They're not killing them. They're just forcefully assimilating them. And all the people in the West, like, oh, I can't believe the Chinese. I can't believe they're building concentration camps. I can't believe what they're doing. Meanwhile, fucking Australia builds concentration camps for people who aren't vaccinated. And, like, it's so fucking stupid. Anyway, this idea of pandering to Indians because they're going to be based in right wing is retarded and 180 degrees from right. Because I'll give you two. Well, number one, again, these Indians are not going to assimilate. They're not going to become American. They're going to be proud of their Indian heritage. They're going to be Indian supremacists. And then secondly, the right, any deal, any pandering, any welfare, any benefit that the right can think of to give to Indians to get them to vote for the right, the left can double. Because the left doesn't have to care about how they're going to pay for it. That's what the right's responsibility is. The right is the outer party. The right is the controlled opposition party. Just look at all the rhinos. Like they're all part of the same party. You have a minority of people who actually love this country, you know, the actual, like the true right, but the majority of the establishment right are controlled opposition who ensure that the will of the regime will always be manifest. And so their job is to be the controlled opposition. So when the left promises a bunch of shit, they can't pay for it. They allow the right to come in to be the bad parent. So like mom if you do your homework, we're going to go to Disneyland. Oh boy, Disneyland. And you do your homework. Oh, I'm ready to go to Disneyland, mommy. I'm ready to go. Okay, let's ask your father. Hey, dad, mommy said we can go to Disneyland. What? We don't have money for Disneyland. Oh, daddy, you're a bad daddy. You're not taking me to Disneyland like mommy promised. I hate you. I hate you, daddy. I love mommy. And that's what both parties' function is. The Democrats are mommy. They promise you all this bullshit they can't afford. And you love them. And then dad has to come in and tell you we don't have money for it. And then you hate him because he's telling you no. And that's how the two-party system works. So it's this idea of pandering to Pajits is fucking retarded. It's not going to benefit the right. We're not going to win. The only way we win is by turning America into Calcutta. We turn America into Calcutta, then we get the Indian vote. Then we win. Is that what winning looks like? Like, because at the end of the day, it's like at some point you have to ask yourself, what are you willing to give up to preserve X? If you have to destroy X to preserve X, then you're not preserving X. You understand that? If you want to save America, preserve America, but the only way to preserve America is to destroy America, then that's not a viable path to do anything. You know, like, that's why people compare the conservatives to, like, liberals who, like, are doing the speed limit, or, you know, it's like socialism, you know, what I think it's communism doing the speed limit or something along those lines. Because that's how they operate. They're trying to win. It's like underpants gnome logic. They think that if they win enough elections while sacrificing their principles and destroying the country, eventually they'll have enough power to actually reverse course and fix things. But that day never comes, because the only way they have power is by continually sacrificing their principles and destroying the country, or at least allowing it to be destroyed without putting up a fight. And so that's why the right is doomed. This is why I have no faith in the right to do shit. The American right, Trump, all these fucking MAGA people, it's not going to mean shit. Unfortunately, the only thing that's going to save America and the West is going to be a horrible war. I mean, preferably not a nuclear war, but it's going to have to be some kind of a war where the government's going to have to be taken down, whether internally or externally, through civil war or through like a hot war with Russia or China. It's going to have to get taken down. There's going to have to be hyper. It's probably going to be, we're going to lose the war against BRICS, and then we're going to have hyperinflation and a civil war at home. And that's kind of like what we're looking at. And I mean, this whole thing about the debt limit, they're going to raise it. Trump's not going to stop the printing. He's not going to end the wars. He's not going to end the welfare. He's not going to reform shit. All this Doge, it's going to be like, okay, we're going to trim like 5% of government waste. Like all these grants for, like, you know, studying pregnant wallabies or something like, yeah, sure. We can cut that. That's pennies. That's drops of water in the ocean. The big shit is the welfare state and the forever wars. I mean, like, the welfare is like 70% of government spending. And then with the forever wars and the military, that's like another 15%. So that's like 90% of the fucking problem. If you deal with the forever wars and the welfare state, you basically solve the problem. If you cut a bunch of weird, you know, wasteful spending in government grants, we're not having a serious conversation. It's like if you have stage 4 cancer and we need to go in there and start doing serious surgery and cutting out large chunks of your organs and replacing them, or you're going to die. And you're talking about maybe changing your diet, maybe taking some pills, you know, like, you're not serious. You might as well just take some fucking morphine and enjoy what time you have. There's no point in you doing these half-ass measures when things are this dire. And all I'm seeing from Doge are these half-ass measures of, you know, we're going to cut this wasteful spending and this grant, and it's not serious. Nobody's seriously talking about reforming welfare or ending the forever wars. So, and especially, in fact, we're going to expand them. So you thought Ukraine and Taiwan and Israel were, now we're going to go over to Iran. We're going to start probably 3 or 4 more wars. How are we going to pay for it? We're going to print the money. Well, how are we going to fight inflation? By flooding the country with illegal aliens and immigrants and Indians and depressing labor and wages. Well, won't that just cause a depression and ruin people's lives? Yep. It's going to cause a depression and ruin people's lives. As long as nobody does anything, the government's not going to stop. They're going to keep fucking doing it. In fact, they're going to be like, oh, you voted for this. Yeah. In fact, we're going to circle back to that. We're going to circle back to that. But anyway, I expect nothing but failure from the right. You know, this whole like, oh, it's a new era. The new era of Trump and MAGA. Nope. I'd love to be wrong. I'd love to see Trump embrace his destiny and be the hero everyone believed in. But I don't believe it. I'm seeing nothing. I'm seeing absolutely nothing. In fact, let me pull up a thing that I saw on Merovingian Club. Oh, God. Everything is slow. My internet's showing it's fine. I'm showing green on my OBS. I don't know why my websites are loading shittily. But during New Year's Eve, Trump was asked about H-1Bs. And he's like, oh, yeah, we need more. We're going to have so many jobs. It's going to be great. We need more immigrants. So, yeah, anyone who thought like Trump was going to do anything, I'm sorry. It's not going to happen. Anyway. All right, let's move on to our second article. So from Zero Hedge, France launches first air raids over Syria since Assad's overthrow. So France is launching air raids against ISIS, who are part of the HDS government that they're endorsing. Apparently, like, oh no, this is like these North Korean troops that are fighting in Ukraine. There's no pictures of them. The one picture that was being bantied about was photoshopped. There are no pictures. There's no proof or evidence of North Korean troops fighting in Ukraine. There is there's an agreement with North Korea and Russia for North Korean engineers to help with the rebuilding of the Donbass, but there is no proof of North Korean soldiers fighting on the front lines alongside Russians, nor would that make sense. But you have Ukraine swearing to fucking God that there's North Koreans dead everywhere, but there's no pictures of them. It's bullshit. And France airbombing ISIS is bullshit. There's no fucking ISIS in Syria. HTS is ISIS. ISIS is Syria. Finkel is Einhorn. Einhorn is a man. But why are they doing this? Because I'll tell you why. It's real simple. It's because we're not leaving Syria. Period. We have these illegal bases in Syria where we're stealing their oil and we're not leaving. Now, you would think, since we've openly endorsed fucking ISIS, we can't really be there to fight ISIS anymore. But here's France bombing ISIS, apparently, even though they're literally part of the government that they endorsed. So this is bullshit. This is fucking the West. This is the regime trying to justify its illegal bases in Syria even after they got what they wanted. They just don't want to leave because they like stealing the oil. Now, HTS knows their days are numbered. They know that they've outlived their usefulness. They know that the honeymoon is over. They know the only reason they're not being bombed to hell is because America does not want to clean up the mess themselves. If America bombs HTS to hell, then America's going to have to send in forces to stabilize the region, set up democratic elections, you know, the whole nation-building shit we did in Afghanistan and Iraq. And America doesn't want to do that. Our plate's a little full at the moment. We will if we have to, but we prefer not to. So we're going to let HTS kind of chill for now, but their days are numbered. The nanosecond they're more trouble than they're worth. If they kick up any kind of fuss, we're going to bomb them to hell. And HES is trying to, like, beg Russia to, like, stay, and they're trying to forge ties with Russia, even though the rumor last week was they're trying to get HES to attack the Russian bases to provoke Russia. But HES is like, no, we want to be friends with Russia. I think HES knows they're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place. They're dependent on the United States because at the end of the day, they're just ISIS mercenaries. But now that they're in a, now that they're a government, now they've kind of become a threat, even though they did exactly what they were told, because America didn't want ISIS to win. They wanted ISIS to bog Russia and Iran down in a proxy war and have them kill each other. It's the same way NATO doesn't give a shit about the Ukrainian people. I mean, before the war, they were openly talking about how corrupt Ukraine was and how they would never let them join the European Union. They spit on Ukrainians. But when they can be used in a proxy war and liquidated to kill a few Russians, they'll give you $1 trillion in missiles and money. They don't give a fuck about you, though. They hate you. They just want to use you for their own purposes. And then, you know, once you've outlived your usefulness, they'll fucking kill you. So nobody's leaving Syria. It doesn't matter that, like, the cause of their occupation has now been undone and they have no moral justification to be there. They'll just bullshit their way, like, oh yeah, we're still fighting ISIS. Like, where? Over there. Their ISIS is over there, guys. We're fighting ISIS. It's fucking bullshit. But it doesn't matter, because who's going to stop them? Who's going to stop them? Nobody. No one's going to, because to stop them is to provoke World War III. The only way you're going to stop the regime is through World War III. Or, I mean, you could try, I know the plan is to kind of wait till the dollar collapses. The problem is they're now cannibalizing Europe. The dollar's not going to collapse next year. It's going to take probably another 10 years. Europe, the euro, is probably going to collapse far sooner than the dollar. The dollar will be the last thing to collapse. And that's, you know, if you're holding out against hope that, like, you can wait out that this economic crisis and avoid World War III, it's probably not going to happen. You're going to be stuck with World War III before then, just so you know. So anyway, yeah, nothing's really changing. You would think that the fall of Syria would be like a major event that would really change the whole thing. And like they tried, like the regime tried to put out all the spin about, oh man, Russia and Iran, they're cooked now. Nothing's really changed. You had the Assad government that was hanging on by a thread, and now you have the HDS government hanging on by a thread. But their oil fields are still occupied. I mean, Israel gained some land and Turkey has gained some land. That's about it. The borders of Israel and Turkey have shifted slightly. But those regions were more or less controlled by them anyway. You know, like, without the government of Assad was so weak and bankrupt that they couldn't enforce shit regardless. So it was kind of like they're basically just formalizing what was already under their control anyway. Anyway, all right. So let me give the website one more chance. I will hit refresh. Can we get something going? Can we get a little something? Nope. Okay. Nothing's working. All right. So our final story isn't a story at all. It's an academic agent video, and it's called, hold on. What is it called? Let me scroll down. It's called 5 Questions That Will Define American Politics in 2025. And I thought these were good. And so I want to piggyback off of him and give my 2 cents. So I'm not even going to play the video. I'm just going to show the 5 questions. Oh, God. It's not even, now nothing's loading. This is so weird because my internet is showing green. I have green on OBS, but like all the websites aren't loading, which I've never seen happen before. I don't even know. I don't even fucking know. I don't know what's going on. Is it the VPN? It's probably the VPN. But if the VPN is fucked, how is OBS still working? Is it because the connection was established before? Is it blocking new connections? All right, fuck. Okay, I guess the show's over. I can't even cover this video because the fucking internet's not working. Are the questions in the comment section? Can I? Nope. Okay. Now OBS went down. Okay, everything's fucked. All right, I guess that's the end of the show. So whatever. I was going to cover the five questions and whatever. Everything broke. Happy New Year, everyone. Thank you to our sponsors. The Dollhouse, Love Nestle, A World Without Men. Oh, you know what? I totally forgot about the other two sponsors. We have Contemplations by Inga, and we have Hardly Heroes by Shattermere Comics. Oh, what a shit show. Hopefully this doesn't set the pace for the rest of the year, but, you know, I have a feeling that it might. Anyway, I guess that's it. That's going to be our show. A nice concentrated shit sandwich that didn't work. All right, let's just end this misery with... let's do the Jesus Pimps prayer. Jesus.
Let us pray the Pimps prayer. Lord, have mercy on the soul of this bitch. Guide my pimp hand and make it strong, Lord, that she might learn a hoe's place. Amen. Jesus.
All right. Amen. Okay, so that's our show. Thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to whatever. I mean, the show went down at the beginning and never came back, and my internet's down, so... I'll upload this as soon as I figure out what's going on. And it'll be a nice, fun 52-minute show. So, anyway, enjoy your week. Hopefully this shit gets fixed by Saturday. Have a good one. Take care. Bye.